All of the phrases used to describe the Gutians separated them from the normal daily life of Mesopotamia. And if we compare these written descriptions with the visual representations of enemies, we've thought about why Mesopotamian artists would want to show the enemy nude with their hands behind their backs. And this is a similar way to dehumanize one's opponents in both visual and in written texts. The Akkadian Empire would last for at least another 20 years after the death of Naram-Sin, and this belies the swift image of divine retribution against Naram-Sin given in the texts. There's very little archaeological evidence for destruction or major disruptions in the cities at this time. So nothing has been found archaeologically that would confirm what is described in the Curse of Akkad. And we have to be satisfied with suggestions of rebellion in the written texts rather than this complete destruction in the region. Shar-Kali-Shari, the king of Akkad who succeeded Naram-Sin and ruled from 2217 to 2193 BC, gave up the title of the king of the four quarters of the world during his reign. And this is significant. It indicates a general withdrawal of the kingdom of Akkad to the north, abandoning the south. The Gutians returned, and they were much more successful in these invasions after Naram-Sin's rule than during it. They briefly controlled southern Mesopotamia. And Shar-Kali-Shari's reign seems to have been largely concerned with defense against both internal and external threats, the Gutians, as well as internal disruption within the kingdom of Akkad. For a couple of years after Shar-Kali-Shari's reign, there was no leader, there was no king. And the Sumerian king list records in this memorable phrase, who was king, who was not king? And if we think about how focused the Sumerian king list was on showing the continuous holding of the office of kingship, this concession to the chaos of the era is really significant and shows that there was no one who could control the region. It seems wild and unruly. In Mesopotamia, this was a period in which the city-states regained their autonomy from Akkadian control, and no single power controlled more than one city in the region. After the fall of the Akkadians, I will now refer to central and southern Mesopotamia as Babylonia to reflect the fact that there is a consistent political unit, and that is the city-state, and that there's also religious, linguistic, and cultural accord in the region. Babylonia will continue as an identifiable and distinct region almost until the end of the course. One example of a newly independent city-state that emerged after the Akkadians fell is Lagash in Sumer. Lagash benefited from the disruption at the end of the Akkadian period, and by the late 3rd millennium had re-established self-rule. The details of this process really can't be sorted out until we come to the reign of Gudea. Gudea was the second ruler of the dynasty that took control of Lagash, and he is one of the best-known rulers of the era, not because of his accomplishments, but because of the numerous portrait sculptures that have been recovered by archaeologists. So it shows that the more evidence that is recovered by archaeologists, the more attention you get. Gudea is not especially noteworthy. And the chance discovery of several statues of the king make him one of the most recognizable rulers in Mesopotamian history. The statues of Gudea emphasize the ruler's piety and humility before the gods, so it's a distinct change from Naram-Sin's way of representing himself. The ruler clasps his hands in the position familiar from earlier Mesopotamian votive sculpture. And in contrast to his bearded, long-haired Akkadian predecessors, Gudea is smooth-shaven and his hair is short or tucked up beneath a cap. Sometimes we can't quite tell. But this hairstyle is much more closely allied with the way that priests showed themselves than with the way the Akkadian rulers presented themselves.